There are many, many possible explanations to the Fermi paradox, and the fact that there are many possible explanations means that there is no one explanation that everybody accepts. But one explanation that I more recently started to like more and more is the following. You see, there are some futurists, Ray Kurzweil, for example, that argue that in not too long, we will reach what is called a singularity, which means artificial intelligence will basically catch up with us and become more powerful than our intelligence. Now, I don't mean by that just they will be able to make more calculations that computers do already today. I'm talking about a different kind of machines that will actually develop consciousness. You know, they will be more intelligent than us. They will have our type of consciousness, and they will be dominant over us.
Today on the podcast, we're joined by Professor Mario Livio, a world-renowned astrophysicist and best-selling author. And today we'll be discussing his newest paper, in which he theorizes that aliens are actually advanced artificial intelligence. Remember, if you guys are on Spotify or Apple Music, to follow the show and leave it a 5-star review so you don't miss any future episodes. And if you're on YouTube, leave the video a like and subscribe. And with that, let's get to the episode. Professor Livio, welcome on the Aftermath Daily.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I'm really excited for our conversation today. As I said, I found a fantastic article by you that basically focuses on artificial intelligence and the possibility of that being alien life. And there's a lot to build on with that, and I'm sure we're going to get into a number of different areas and ebbs and flows on that. However, to start off with the base and kind of the idea behind this whole thought process, can you dive into what the Fermi paradox is, and then both the original definition and how that applies to the new way of thinking that you've proposed?
Yes. Let me just first say that the article that you are referring to was written by myself and Professor Martin Rees. So I want to mention that because he definitely, was part of this article. Yes, the Fermi paradox has its history in an event that happened in 1950 when the famous physicist Enrico Fermi was visiting the Los Alamos National Lab. And it was during a lunch, and he was sitting with a few physicist colleagues, and they were discussing a little bit the question of alien civilizations and so on. And then suddenly Fermi asked, okay, but where is everybody? And what he was referring to is that he made a very simple calculation that even with speeds that were, available at the time, roughly, for civilizations to move from one place to another, any intelligent technological civilization could have reached every corner of our galaxy, the Milky Way, within a time that was much shorter than the age of the galaxy. And therefore, he expressed his amazement as to how come we have not seen any signs of such visits or things, of alien civilizations. And that was what has later become known as the Fermi paradox. Now, even though, by the way, Enrico Fermi was not the first person to actually wonder about that. There was a Russian, a Soviet physicist by the name of Tsiolkovsky, who actually wondered about this years before Fermi, but it has become known as the Fermi paradox. Namely, where are they, basically?
And how does your proposal look forward into answering this question? I know it's been a question that's been debated for decades now, with some answers coming that there is a great filter, with some being that maybe alien life just simply isn't interested in us. But I think the angle that you've taken is not only very likely, but also we're seeing the remnants start to surface themselves now with humanity. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes. Let me start first by saying really that, more than about 100 resolutions have been proposed over the years to the Fermi paradox. And in some sense, the fact that there are 100 possible solutions already tells you that probably none of those is actually seen as compelling. because if there was one compelling explanation, we wouldn't need 100 explanations. So that is indeed the situation. Do you want me to talk a little bit about what that great filter is and so on? Because that has gotten quite a bit of attention.
Yeah, let's definitely dive into that because I feel like some may not know, and in itself, it's kind of a big part of the story.
Yeah, so look, one of the solutions, in some sense, the simplest one, is that the reason we have not seen any signs of other intelligent civilizations is simply because there are none in our galaxy. You know, we are alone. We are alone in the galaxy, so no wonder we have not seen signs for other civilizations. And then the question is, why are they are there no others? And this is where the suggestion of the great filter has been suggested. And the idea is that there is some obstacle that somehow prevents civilizations from becoming, you know, highly technological civilizations. And once you suggest that, there are, of course, also two possibilities. One is that that filter has been in our past or that it is in our future. Now, what can be a filter, for example? You know, just simple examples. Maybe the filter is the origin of life. You know, maybe the origin of life is just so rare that, you know, it almost never happens and we just happen to, you know, somehow succeed where everybody else has followed. In that case, the filter in this example would be in our past, that, you know, we somehow miraculously passed that great filter, but we may be a very rare occasion or even maybe the only, you know, civilization, technological civilization in the Milky Way. And this is why we haven't seen anybody else. There is also a possibility that the filter is in the future. Namely, that at some point in our future, for example, we will cause some incredible pandemic that, you know, will destroy all civilizations. And maybe that's the fate of all civilizations in some sense. So, which again would make it perhaps impossible to advance to some, to progress to something really advanced, you know, and so on. So this is the situation of the, with a great filter, either a great filter in our past or a great filter in our future. Now, what we, Martin Rees and I, suggest in this article is that maybe it's actually very different. And, you know, I'm sure we will talk about this more, but we suggest that the searches we have conducted so far actually miss the point because the civilizations that maybe exist out there are very, very different from the way we think about civilizations.
So staying on the great filter here for one second, do you think there's a possibility of there being multiple great filters? So filters that maybe are at the birth of a civilization, one that maybe meets at some point in, you know, the ancient period of humanity, whatever it might be, a pandemic, a disease, and then something that we may be entering now, which I think dives into what we'll continue to talk about, but the development of artificial intelligence. Is that a possibility as well?
Well, the artificial intelligence I don't regard as a filter. I regard that as more as, you know, a real change in our thinking, that maybe our searches have been misguided, but that's not a filter. But there can be multiple filters. I mean, I mentioned origin of life, but, you know, it could be, you know, on Earth, for example, it took more than 3 billion years to advance from unicellular life to multicellular life. So that is perhaps a great filter, which in many other places maybe did not work. Or, you know, for speaking about filters in our future, you know, okay, maybe there is some form of nuclear war or whatever, so that civilizations destroy themselves. So that's another possibility of a filter. So definitely there can be multiple filters in the evolution of any civilization. Now, the artificial intelligence that we suggest in our article is not a filter. It just really, we try to explain that maybe we have been completely misguided in the way we think about the problem, and we try to look for alien civilizations.
So let's dive into that. For decades now, we've been looking for something like us, for physical beings that may be living on the surface of a planet or that are traveling the galaxy in the way that the original aspect of the Fermi paradox was originated. However, as you suggested, there's another answer there. There's something that just now is maybe coming to the forefront of many people's imaginations, and that is this artificial life. So can you speak to that and why you think it's probably the most likely?
Sure. So look, I mean, if you look at life as we know it, biological life, yes, biological life is certainly limited. I mean, for example, the capacity of our brain, both in terms of volume and in terms of processing power, is surely limited. And, you know, we maybe are even approaching those limits already. But we now realize that, you know, there are electronic brains, you know, namely artificial intelligence, which at this point are already starting to surpass human abilities in many areas. At the moment, they are small areas, you know, like, okay, computers now play better chess than anybody in the world. They now play even better Go than anybody in the world. And those are small examples. But computer scientists and futurists such as, you know, Ray Kurzweil and so on, tell us that they think that within a few decades, artificial intelligence will surpass human capabilities completely, you know, by a large margin. Now, let's say that they are wrong and it will not take a few decades. Let's say it will take even thousands of years, okay? Which I think everybody would probably agree that within thousands of years, artificial intelligence, given the pace at which it is advancing, can surpass us in almost every area. Now, thousands of years is still nothing compared to evolution, to the time it takes to evolve us, which was billions of years, you know. So it is very possible that the entire question of biological intelligence may be, generically speaking, just a brief phase in the evolution of intelligences. You know, that is then being totally surpassed by artificial intelligence, which means that if there are technological civilizations in our galaxy, they actually may all be in the form of artificial intelligence and not in the form of, you know, the wet brains that we are used to. So that is a completely different type of animal than what we've been looking for. And you mentioned a few things of how they are different. Biological life is tied to the surface of a planet. We evolved, we appeared here, we evolved here, you know, and so on. We need the star for energy, we need liquid water for chemical reactions and things of that nature. So that's how we think about this, and this is how we actually, at least until now, tended to search for such life. You know, we try to listen for radio signals, we try to look for laser optical signals and so on from things that live on habitable planets and so on. But if it is true that artificial intelligence is going to become the dominant technological form in the galaxy, then, you know, looking for this, I mean, this may be completely antiquated technologies for them. They may be using completely different things. But here is the main thing. Technological civilizations that are based on AI can actually live for billions of years, whereas technological civilizations like the one we know may be just thousands of years, you know, at most. Now, this, on the face of it, seems to only exacerbate the Fermi paradox. Because if you have technological civilizations that live for billions of years, how come we have not seen those? Instead of, you know, the brains of the types of the dogs have and we have, you know, and so on. But here is an important difference. We, meaning biological life and humans, we have evolved through Darwinian evolution. And Darwinian evolution really puts a premium on survival of the fittest, which means that we by nature are kind of expansionists and aggressive. And actually this is on what the Fermi paradox is based to begin with, in the sense that the idea is that these civilizations tried to expand to all the galaxy. Now, these artificial intelligence civilizations, they have not evolved by natural selection. And so maybe they don't have these aggressive expansionist tendencies, and they don't want to expand the whole galaxy. Maybe they just want to, you know, sit quietly and do their philosophy in deep space, you know, and not care about anybody else and so on. So the whole basis of the Fermi paradox goes away if you think in these terms. I mean, you know, we didn't see them because, you know, they never went anywhere. They, you know, just sat there. Now, not only they sat there, they didn't have to sit on the surface of a planet, since they didn't need the surface or liquid water for reaction. I mean, sure, the civilization that formed them, that produced them, was on the surface of a planet. But once AI started to dominate, they actually may find it much easier to live in space where there is no gravity and construct there, you know, large, you know, there are these things like we call Dyson spheres, which are these constructions that try to absorb the power of the whole star or even many stars or even the whole galaxy, you know, and so on. And they may live in space. They may sort of, as I say, live these contemplative lives and not care about anybody else. We have certainly not looked for those, and they don't use any radio technology. And, you know, if they send any signals at all, those may be ones that we absolutely cannot decipher, because, you know, if it is true that biological civilizations are a very short phase, then it is virtually, you know, unreasonable that we will find them exactly in the same phase that we are. I mean, most likely, you know, they are more advanced than us by a billion of years, in which case, who knows, you know, what kind of signals they may transmit, which we may not ever recognize as artificial signals. So this is exactly what we suggest.
And there's a philosophical argument here that centers around consciousness. And some anti-futurists believe that consciousness can never be achievable by machines. And in some ways that may be correct, but it also may be the way that we actually look at consciousness itself is incorrect and in how it could be utilized by machines. What is your perspective on this take? And do you think that these artificial civilizations per se can hold a level of consciousness?
Yes, this is a very, very important question and a very difficult one. And I will not even pretend to say that I know the answer to that. Some futurists say that consciousness is what we call an emergent property, that once the system that you have developed is sufficiently complex, consciousness will arise spontaneously. And by consciousness, I mean, you know, having an inner life, you know, being able to dream about things that don't exist, you know, and things like that, which we normally associate with human consciousness. And so some futurists say that. There are others which are equally knowledgeable and important who say, no, machines will never develop consciousness. They will remain what philosophers refer to as zombies. Namely, yes, they will be able to do all kinds of manipulations and calculations and whatnot and this, but they will never, you know, have this inward look, you know, that we have. If machines will be only zombies, I would say, you know, our future looks rather bleak. The future of civilizations. I mean, you know, this will not be things like us. Yes, they will be able to construct things and do things, and, but you know, even a child will not be able to have a meaningful conversation with such a machine. On the other hand, if it is true that consciousness is an emergent property, maybe the machines will be conscious, in which case, you know, they will be not only like us, but much better than us, because they will be better than us not only in their calculations ability and, you know, and what they can do and how they can play chess and so on, but even in terms of their imagination and things, you know, and so on, they will be better than us. And then there is no question that, you know, they will have the hegemony of all, you know, everything that's happening in the universe. And at some level, we will even have to welcome that. You know, that's how things will evolve. So that is really something that we don't know. And I think it's a crucial question, really. But at this point, I don't think that anybody can actually prove one way or another that, you know, artificial intelligence will develop consciousness or not. Certainly, look, artificial intelligence that we have already today does not have consciousness. It can still do phenomenal things. And, you know, it will be able to do even more phenomenal things, but we don't know if it will be conscious or not.
So one of your other books, Why? What Makes Us Curious? You talk about one of the main fundamental human conditions of the question of why, and why that has pushed us to push so many barriers in both science, culture, and many other aspects of humanity. Do you think machines missing this in itself prevents them from being able to take that step forward? If they are these quote-unquote zombies, would they have any interest in asking why and looking to push out, you know, throughout the universe and answer some of these fundamental physics questions?
Yeah, you know, I in my book, Why, I actually wondered about this question, and again, I didn't know the answer. I mean, look, machines, I think, will almost certainly have a curiosity about certain, you know, maybe mathematical problems, things like that, you know, prove this, prove that, I don't know what. Will they be curious about why X loves Y and not Z, you know, and so on? I don't know. Again, you know, if this curiosity itself, if it will be an emergent property, then yes, then they may be curious. But if not, maybe not. It's not just why, by the way, it's also how and so on. So how I'm a little bit more certain that machines will probably have that. You know, they will want to understand how do you do this or that, and I don't know what. Why is the more complicated question.
So one of the quotes from the article, which in itself I found beautiful, was, "We may be near the end of Darwinian evolution. whereas the evolution of technological intelligent beings is just at its infancy. We're seeing some developments that are moving at such a rapid pace that many people are not only not ready for it, but it was quite unexpected. ChatGPT and many other AI systems are slowly becoming a part of the mainstream world. Does this worry you of how quickly this evolution is taking place while the stagnation of human evolution in itself may be happening?
Yes, the truth is that it does worry me because it is evolving so fast that it is very difficult to keep pace in terms of, you know, regulations, codes of behavior, you know, applying a variety of moral, humane characteristics, you know, things of that nature. I mean, look, I'll give you an example which is not from artificial intelligence, okay? You know that, you know, people have been able to clone a sheep. I'm not in that area, so I don't know how much more difficult or not it is to clone a person. Somehow, you know, again, not being an expert, it seems to me that the jump from cloning a sheep to cloning a person is not insurmountable. Maybe there are things which I don't know, and it is, but even if it currently is, I have no doubt that at some point, you know, this will become possible. But I think most people, maybe not all, but most people would agree that cloning people is, there is something unethical about that, right? I mean, and that some rules and some prohibitions even, you know, and so on should be stated on that, yes? Now, fortunately, I think the cloning business maybe has not developed in quite such a, you know, breakneck pace. Artificial intelligence at the moment is really evolving in an incredible pace. And I fear that there will not be enough time, you know, to generate the ethical, you know, and humane type conditions and restrictions at the rate at which this thing is happening. Plus, there is always the problem that, you know, artificial intelligence, unlike, let's say, I don't know, particle acceleration, is not something that can be done only at the level of, you know, an entire continent putting their minds together and money together. Artificial intelligence, at some level, somebody can do in their garage, you know, and not only in their garage, but in their garage in Uzbekistan, I don't know, you know, somewhere, yes? So it seems much more difficult to put in all the ethics that you would like so as to cover all of humanity. It is a problem, by the way, also with cloning and so on and so forth, yes? But it seems to me to be a much bigger problem with artificial intelligence. And so I think that is worrisome, and I think that perhaps not enough thinking power is put currently and not at a fast enough rate to know what to do. And you know, maybe things will arrange themselves somehow naturally, but it's hard to be sure of that. So, you know, so I am a bit worried about that. You know, other than being worried, there isn't much I can do about it. but I am somewhat worried.
No, that's something that it's such a complex conversation, because artificial intelligence obviously offers so many valuable opportunities for technological development and just ways that it can affect society. But like you're saying, once the cat's out of the bag, it's really hard to make pivots on the fly and be able to, you know, reel it all back in. Do you see opportunities for there to possibly be a merger of this physical and technological intelligence? Something that we've seen in sci-fi shows like Star Trek, for example, where humans themselves and our physical beings mesh with artificial intelligence.
I have absolutely no doubt that in the initial phases, one of which we are at now, this is what's going to happen. There is no question. Yes. For the moment, humans are still driving the artificial intelligence and what it does. There is no doubt about that. Yes. So, there will be a phase at which humans and artificial intelligence work together, hopefully for the benefit of humankind. Unfortunately, there may be some who will work not for the benefit of humankind, but there is no doubt that at the current phase and for a while, we will be working in tandem and, you know, in some synergy. Yes. The problem is that once what is called the singularity will happen, namely, the point when this artificial intelligence surpasses humans in all capacities, maybe perhaps including consciousness and so on, at that point, the role of humans will necessarily become somewhat irrelevant. So I think that the phase in which there is a synergy between the two, it may be as short-lived as the phase of biological intelligence was in the, you know, development of technological civilizations.
This is a bit of a massive question and one that's probably difficult to answer, but part of the scare for some people is what we've seen in pop culture movies like Terminator, where these artificial beings turn on humanity and look at us as ants. And in many ways, we would be in terms of intelligence. But do you think that there would be any type of animosity or any type of danger in that sense? Or is it more so that we simply are just such a low level for them that they don't even want to pay us any mind?
Yeah, of course, the answer is that I don't know. Now, I did mention that the fact that they will not evolve via natural selection may make them, I mean, once they are at this level that they have also consciousness and so on, maybe they will not be aggressive in nature and not expansionist in nature, you know, and so on, in which case, maybe there is no danger. I don't know if that will indeed happen or not. Clearly, once an artificial intelligence surpasses us by a billion years, we are just like worms to them. So I don't know that they will pay. I mean, you know, what kind of communication and mutual life do we have with the worms of our world? You know, so, right. So, you know, at that point, I think the question becomes moot, kind of, you know.
Another one of your books focused on Galileo working against science deniers and his famous quote of, "Yet it moves." Let's dive into society today. And like we're saying, we have artificial intelligence moving at such a rapid pace. Does it worry you that we may be entering another period where you may be left saying, "Yet it moves," because of the lack of people acknowledging how quickly this is developing and maybe looking in all the wrong areas while it's right in front of our faces that these type of artificial civilizations can develop and develop quickly?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, the problem of science denial, I think, exists irrespective of artificial intelligence. You know, when I wrote Galileo and the Science Deniers, I clearly had, you know, my vision focused on a lot of science denial that we have today, you know, with respect to climate change. We had it with respect to in the initial phases of the COVID pandemic, and so on. Unfortunately, we still have lots of people who deny science. And the thing is the following. It is always a bad idea to bet against the judgment of science. It was bad at the time of Galileo, and it is even worse now. And the reason is not because scientists are always right. In fact, scientists are sometimes the first to admit that they are wrong. But science, the way it works, is that science always corrects itself. It self-corrects. And sometimes the correction takes place within a few years. Sometimes it takes decades. Sometimes it may take a few centuries. But it always corrects itself at the end. So to bet against the judgment of science is a bad idea, in general. To bet against the judgment in science when human life is at stake, like in the case of the pandemic, or when the fate of the entire biosphere of the Earth is at stake, as in the case of climate change, is just unconscionable. So that's very, very worrisome. And, you know, Galileo, I actually argue in a different article that maybe he never said, and yet it moves, but he certainly thought that. Yeah, maybe he never said it in these words, but he certainly thought this. But he gave another sentence, which I find amazing, which was, you know, okay, people told him that, but there are things, it doesn't agree what you find with what's written in scriptures and this and that and so on. And at one point he said, I don't believe that the same God, you know, Galileo was still a religious person because almost everybody was at his time. He said, I don't believe that the same God who gave us our senses and intelligence and, wisdom wanted us to abandon their use. So, that is exactly what I'm saying. You know, you can believe whatever you want, but, you know, you should use your reason, your intelligence and your senses. And this is what science tries to do. So I'm very worried about science denial, and this is irrespective, like I said, of what artificial intelligence will do.
So recently we've had in the U.S. a number of congressional hearings discussing UFOs or UAPs, and it's hit every headline. And in many ways, over the past couple of years, it's almost become a mainstream talking point for people to actually, for the first time, acknowledge the possibilities of UFOs. What is your opinion on this? And if it coincides with these artificial species, do you think that they would have any interest in visiting the planet in the ways that are articulated in these type of congressional hearings?
Okay, so here is the thing. There is no question that if it is true, as we posit in this article, Martin Rees and I, that technological intelligence in the galaxy is dominated perhaps by machines, then it makes sense to look also for artifacts of these civilizations, including in our own solar system. You know, even if they are not visiting now, maybe they visited a billion years ago or whenever, you know, and so on. And there could be artifacts, and it makes absolute sense to search for such artifacts and, you know, to look for, as I said, you know, to search for radio signals may not be the right way of doing this and so on. So in this sense, I'm all for, you know, trying to find evidence for potential visits in the past or now or whenever, in the solar system, in the Earth, everywhere, yes, and so on. And to look for other kinds of signs of a potentially artificial intelligence in the galaxy. You know, things like huge structures, like Dyson spheres, you know, around the other stars, or other types of things, infrared radiation, which comes from waste heat, because they still need to use energy and things like that. That is okay. At the same time, I will say, you know, the late Carl Sagan said once, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And to be honest, in all the claims that I've seen so far about UFOs or this and that, either in congressional hearings or in literature or in testimonies and I don't know what, none of that at this point rises for me to the level of extraordinary evidence. So while I completely accept that probably there are some phenomena that have not been fully explained so far, yes, I don't regard that as extraordinary evidence. So I have not yet seen any evidence that convinces me that, you know, we have seen signs of alien technological civilizations.
And I think the best way to end it here, and especially how you were just highlighting, and I'll read this again, it's from the article, and I thought it was beautiful in its own way, is that you argue that this idea suggests three things about the entities that SETI searches could reveal. They will not be organic or biological. They will not remain on the surface of the planet where their biological precursors lived. And they will not be able to, we will not be able to fathom their motives or intentions. So looking forward, we've spent decades basically searching the opposite. And even with the James Webb telescope recently being up, we're still looking at planets and trying to see if there's biological life on the surface. What are some pivots that we can make over the next few years to be able to start trying to find some of these civilization? And as you spoke to artifacts, like a Dyson sphere, what are some examples of these artifacts?
So first of all, I think we absolutely should go on looking for simple life. Because in any case, you know, that may be more common than actual civilizations, because it is difficult to, you know, reach the stage of civilizations, yes? And there are a number of obstacles along the way. And in the case of the Earth, you know, there were all kinds of contingencies. You know, there was an asteroid that killed the dinosaurs and, you know, all kinds of things like that, which maybe have not happened in other places. So maybe it's difficult to evolve to any form of complex life. So we should definitely use, you know, the James Webb Space Telescope and other facilities, you know, that are coming online on in the ground and so on in the future to look for simple life, yes, to look for biosignatures, what we call in the atmospheres of other planets. There is no question about that. That should absolutely be a first priority. In terms of looking for technological civilizations, yes, we should be looking for artifacts. I still think we should continue to look for, you know, some types of signals, maybe even radio or optical, because, you know, you never know what you are going to find. And we should look for, there has been a survey that looked at many galaxies for infrared emission that appears to be not caused by natural sources, you know, like dust and star formation and so on. And that was a large survey a few years ago, and it actually identified a few tens of galaxies that have unusual infrared emission. Those should definitely be followed up, because mid-infrared emission reveals waste, potentially waste heat. Now, in most cases, probably that does come from natural sources, only we just, you know, haven't figured it out exactly. But we should definitely follow up on those particular, there have been in particular about half a dozen galaxies that the combination of ultraviolet, which indicates star formation, and infrared, which indicates how many small stars there are, did not appear compatible with natural sources. So we should follow those up. So definitely all of this should continue. And, you know, we also need luck. With some luck, maybe we'll find something.
Well, Professor Livio, I want to thank you again for a fantastic conversation. In many ways, it's so insightful. And God, I mean, society is moving quick, and we have a lot of different things that we're going to be looking forward to, and also hopefully being able to address in, you know, the next coming decades. And yeah, it's going to be an interesting time to in history. So thank you again for coming on today and speaking to it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And if you have any engagements you want to let anyone know about, any upcoming articles, just let them know here. And I'll also make sure everything's linked below some of the books we talked about today.
Well, I have a book that's in preparation together with my colleague, Jack Szostak, who is a Nobel laureate in physiology or medicine, about life. But, you know, of course, it will be a while before it appears, but it may appear around November, not of this year, but of next year.
Fantastic. Well, stay in touch. We'll, once that's coming out, I'll make sure we get you back on here. We'll talk it up, and we'll get everyone to go right to the shelves and buy those books. Because like I said, some of the ones we spoke about today, it's amazing how so many of them tie together, but in so many ways, it hits home on so many cultural, social, and of course, scientific issues. So they're always fantastic, and stay in touch. And I'm looking forward to that one already.
Thanks. Okay. Bye.